Herzlich willkommen zu Folge Nummer 4 zum Podcast Feines Bewusstsein mit Anne Siegel. Ich bin Journalistin und Schriftstellerin. I'm a writer and now you already realize this will be an episode in two languages. I will talk to Swami Shailendra Saraswati, who is my meditation teacher from India. Swami Shailendra Saraswati, das ist der Mann, der vor mir sitzt, ein alterslos wirkender Inder in oranger Robe. In Wahrheit ist er Mitte 60, war früher Quantenphysiker und Marketingfachmann und als Maharishi Mahesh Yogi ihn gefragt haben soll, ob er nicht sein Schüler werden wolle, soll er geantwortet haben: Wenn ich die Newtonschen Gesetze anwenden möchte, muss ich ja auch nicht Newton persönlich kennen. Seinen Start als Meditationslehrer hatte er im Norden Finnlands. Der Swami wurde vor ein paar Jahren mein Lehrer, bei dem ich regelmäßig weiterführende Techniken der vedischen Meditation erlerne. Das Gespräch, das ihr heute hört, haben wir aufgenommen in der Ilse Eickhoff Akademie in Bremen. Wir haben vor ein paar Jahren eine kleine Reihe zusammen begonnen, die ich immer mal wieder nach Meditationen und Unterweisungen mit dem Swami und meinem Aufnahmegerät fortgeführt habe. Das sind Gespräche, die aus der Freude an der Erkenntnis entstanden sind und an denen ich euch jetzt zumindest in ein paar Auszügen teilnehmen lassen möchte. Bei unserer letzten Begegnung wollten wir eigentlich meine kleine Reihe über Transzendenz weiterführen und dann schlug mir der Swami vor, dass wir doch mal über aktuelle Entwicklungen sprechen könnten, denn viele Leute seien gerade da ob etwas verwirrt. Und so verabredeten wir uns, mit dem kollektiven Bewusstsein zu befassen und was das eigentlich mit der Politik eines Volkes macht. Und ganz bewusst mit Trump. Ja, ihr hört richtig. Also, welcome to diversity, peace and the Dharma and what it has to do with this very selfish guy in the White House. Is he responsible for what happened? I just introduced my Vedic meditation teacher, Swami Shailendra Saraswati from India here. He teaches me further techniques in Vedic meditation, formerly known also as transcendental meditation or deep meditation. I already talked about it in the first three episodes of this podcast, Feines Bewusstsein, Fine Consciousness. Sorry for you guys who only speak English. It was in German, and just so you don't wonder, I call the Swami Swami Ji, which translates into Dearest Swami, something I love to honor him as my dear teacher. Swamiji was a quantum physicist and studied marketing specialist before he became a meditation teacher for the 4,000-year-old technique of Vedic meditation. This episode and the next ones following will be in English, just so you know that too. Stellt euch also vor, ich sitze am Boden und schaue in einem sehr indisch geprägten Raum, der gefüllt ist mit der Energie vieler Meditierender, hier in der Akademie, in einen Kiefernwald hinterm Fenster, hinterm Swami, auf den Kiefern Schnee und nur ein Fasan ist ab und zu von draußen zu hören. Imagine me sitting on the meditation mat, next to my Indian teacher in his orange robe, facing a wonderful wintry forest glade, with a sparkle of snow behind the window of this cozy meditation academy, Ilse Eickhoff Academy in Bremen, North Germany, where I followed up with my series about transcendence and consciousness, and because we talked about the President of the United States in this year, his name was Trump. I changed my plans for this podcast and am sending this episode out to the world today after the Capitol riots in Washington this week. But don't you go wrong, there's hope in the world, and the Swami shows us how we'll be able to find it. What I didn't know in this very moment when we taped our conversation here, a week later the Swami flew to Washington to teach people there in an important organization in the technique of Vedic meditation. Sorry, if you hear this here for the first time, Swamiji, you know I'm a journalist and writer and so full of curiosity. I couldn't help it and found it out. I love to deepen stories so much. Also, jetzt geht es los. Freut euch auf den ersten Teil meiner Folge Diversity, Peace and Our Dharma and what this has to do with Mr. Trump. Herzlich willkommen und gute Unterhaltung.
It makes it so much easier. I'm thinking of what you said once so often. You said like, the mobile phone, it's just the people want connection, you know? So yes. Just bring it down to this, you know? This brings me maybe to the first question, Swamiji. There's so much judging in the world. You know, like, and we are, I don't know if the world has been as complex as it is now in earlier times. But sometimes I have the feeling that people are afraid of living because they are afraid of stepping into the wrong way, you know? Like, maybe it's wrong and they better don't live instead of, hey, just try out. You know, if you go wrong, okay, go a step back or so. How is this from your point of view? Like,
when you say judging, judging about oneself? Or
yes, about oneself, because our world is so complex. And this is interesting. I think New Age, lifestyle, this is such a big section. I mean, even on the book market, there are so many people. And there are, even, I mean, there are a lot of readers or people who want to know, how does a good life look like? From a Vedic perspective, maybe.
See, whenever you say judging, it's always a question of good versus bad. But always there has to be some criteria on the basis of which you decide good and bad. And who gives those criteria? These criteria come from the society, from past experiences of other people. But life is a flow. And anything that happened in the past cannot be a guide for what is happening now. Every moment has its own laws. Like the concept of dharma in Vedic literature. It's not, like some people unfortunately translate it as religion.
But it's the same like in the Dharma at the Buddhists have?
Exactly.
Okay,
the same.
Okay.
Dharma is basically like the dharma of a stone is to be hard. The dharma of water is to be liquid. Like that. The basic quality. And then, of course, it also includes what is my quality right now, which will make me do whatever the nature wants me to do. But that will be different at different times. When I'm hungry, my dharma is to eat. When I'm tired, my dharma is to sleep. So dharma is not something which can be defined once and followed for all the time. Similarly, dharma is not something which can be same for everyone. For each person, dharma is different. For the same person, from moment to moment, dharma changes. The only way to find the right dharma is by diving within oneself. In fact, the whole story of Mahabharata, Mahabharata is a very big epic, and many people don't realize that the central idea of Mahabharata is to break this bondage of following the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law. All the problems started there because some people, in fact, one hero, the good side and a bad side, and the leader of the good side is supposed to be the hero, and many people consider him as the hero. But if you really look at it deeply, finds that he is the villain of the whole story. Because he is so stuck with the letter of the law. I must do this, and this is written in the scriptures. I must follow this. And because of that, problems have arisen. And Krishna comes and he just breaks all the laws. And he tells that go deep within, and whatever is at this particular moment for this particular person right will be told to you from inside. So that is something which the world has to learn today also. And this dharma being different for different people, apart from judging oneself, first of all, when we judge ourselves, we judge according to somebody else's criteria.
Interesting, yes, you're right.
So that will never be right. And another thing is, when we judge ourselves and judge other people, if at all I find that, okay, I've judged myself correctly, that what I'm doing right now is good, then also there's a problem that sometimes people think that if what I'm doing right now, I'm very confident that this is good, this is according to my dharma, then if somebody else is doing something other than that, then that is bad. But that may be his dharma. I normally use one example. Like, in a best example of an ideal society, if we ever want to create an ideal society, is something which is already there. An example is already there. We can follow the rules, look at it. And that example is this human body. Is such a nicely, there are trillions of cells, much more than the population in the world. Each cell is an individual entity, like a unicellular organisms are also there. So each of our cells is like a unicellular organism, but they all cooperate so well that something completely different is created. None of these cells could ever imagine the capabilities that I have, that a human being has. It's way beyond. And what do I have to do for this coordination to take place? Nothing, just be.
Be myself, yes.
I don't even have to know that there's a pancreas or a liver or this or that. As long as I exist, that means as long as I'm alive, all my cells will function in a completely coordinated manner. This is even more surprising because they are not of similar nature. They are completely different. In fact, if all my cells were of the same type, then I wouldn't be able to do anything. The very fact that I am able to do so many things is because of the differentiation. Because the bone is very hard and the skin is very soft.
So what you mean is like we are made of diversity?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And many people who think that if the world has to live in peace and harmony should be there, then everybody should think on similar lines. So, that will not be the answer. If that could happen, that will be a very boring thing and nothing will get accomplished. Just like if all the cells were functioning in the same manner, we wouldn't be able to do anything. Now, then we think, if everybody is thinking differently, then how to coordinate? Now, coordination is at a different level from where the differentiation is.
Okay.
Like in an organization. There's a marketing department, there's a production department. And they have completely opposite ideas. Like marketing department would say everybody should have a car according to his own color and his own choice. And the production department would say all the cars should be exactly the same so that it's cheaper and easier to make. And there is no logic which can ever give a compromise between these two. The only possible way is somebody who is at a different level. The managing director decides. And he cannot give a logical answer why I have decided that instead of 100 models or one model, we should have 10 models, let's say. He cannot, because that is something which comes from his broader awareness of both the situations, and it's just a feeling that comes. So, how is the coordination accomplished in our body? Every cell has its active element on the surface of the cell. But what the cell should do, how does it decide? It sends a messenger RNA from the surface of the cell to the center of the cell, where the nucleus is there. And in the nucleus, there is a DNA. Mm-hmm. And the RNA goes to the DNA, then gets a copy of the instruction, and a messenger RNA comes back to the surface and tells what to do. Okay. Now, each cell is completely different. Their requirements are different. Their tendencies are different. And if the cell is not looking at other cells or the rest of the body to decide what to do, that means it's completely selfish. Yeah. All it does what it itself wants to do and doesn't bother about anything. Yeah. And still this coordination is taking place. That is because every cell is asking its own DNA, but that DNA is the same in all the cells.
Okay.
So that is the level at which integration takes place. The rest of the cell is responsible for differentiation. The bone cells have to be hard. And another thing is, you know, some people think, oh, we should be humble and, you know, we should not be proud of ourselves and things like that. That is also a wrong idea. Like two bone cells, when they talk to each other, they'll be saying, oh, hardness is such a good quality. And pity those poor skin cells which are so soft, which cannot even, you know, have a fixed structure and all those things. So it's okay for them because their definition of goodness is hardness.
Interesting.
That's how they were born.
Yeah.
And it's good that they be proud of that. No, if they start being humble, oh, skin cells are soft, let us also be slightly soft and everything will go haywire. Yeah. Similarly to skin cells, the opposite. They'll say, oh, softness is such a good quality. These poor bone cells, they can't even bend. So everybody is born to function in that particular manner and he has to be proud of that. And there's nothing wrong in that.
And it's very interesting because you can think of the higher organizations, even like to say like states or, you know, countries. I mean, this is really interesting. You can like transform it some, you know, put it onto other organizations.
Exactly.
And I was just thinking of a friend. She just told me her husband had said like, you are a bad person. And I was so shocked, like, okay. But from your point of view, the answer would have had to be, you think I'm a bad person, yeah, but, you know, this is, you know, out of your criteria, are different.
Absolutely.
Yes, okay, yeah. And of course, when you say this, it brings me a little bit, talking of a higher, what did you say, like a higher awareness, mm-hmm. Somebody has to have the higher awareness. Well, we don't live in a world anymore, or dictators we always had, but like where the people who are like presidents really have the higher awareness. Of course, I'm thinking of Trump.
Actually, it's not somebody who has to have higher awareness.
Ah.
No. Like,
this would be the government then.
Yeah, this would be something abstract.
Okay.
And that can be called collective consciousness.
Okay.
No. Like, if, see, who am I? No. If, sometimes I say, suppose I will go tomorrow. Suppose some person from a different planet comes and he doesn't know that this hand and this leg and this tongue are part of the same organism. No. And he, suppose somehow he can understand what the tongue is saying, you know. And he's like, that this thing which is moving will go somewhere. Because good. It is the tongue that is saying, I will go.
Okay.
And suppose I write the same thing. And the other person, now, when I write something or when I say something, both of them, you take it as if I have said that. No. But these are two different ways, And when I'm writing, the hand has the full authority of my whole body. And when I'm speaking, the tongue has the full authority of my whole body. Similarly, there could be many different ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That means it is not any individual cell or any individual part of the body which is the leader or the government. Or the government is the consciousness which is spread all over the body. And sometimes some part of the body starts to express that consciousness. Sometimes some other part starts to express that same consciousness. No. But it is not that part that is speaking. It is that consciousness that is speaking.
That's so interesting, because that brings it down. I mean, talking of Trump, sorry, I hope it's not too political for you.
Mm-hmm.
I just read a very interesting thing, because there is this discussion going on. Is the society a society that created Trump?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's another one who just wrote, and I read it in a Swiss newspaper, and he was writing like, okay, see the excerpts of Facebook, all the hate, like the brainwashing,
mm-hmm.
and if you bring down Facebook to a person, you would have Trump, mm-hmm. which was really interesting. Like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Is there something in our minds? And, you know, so the society, would you say the society created a president like the Americans have now?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
not just the presidents. It also creates the authors, the artists, the musicians, everything. No person can be independent of the rest of the society.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I ask myself very often the question, like, which is the most perfect society to be a writer?
Uh-huh.
For example, if I would live in Norway, even the idea to write a book, even though I wouldn't have a publishing house, they would pay me $1,500 just because of the fact I write a book.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So, you know, the Norwegian government, they push a lot of
intercultural
things.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very interesting. But I love to live here. To be a writer. So, yeah. But this is an interesting thought. Like, okay.
Yeah, my hand has been created by my consciousness. Because my consciousness wanted to have the experience of lifting something or, you know, touching something. So that consciousness created the DNA, which in turn created this, and the hand is got created. My consciousness wanted to have the experience of seeing. So some particular cells were tailor-made accordingly so that it is able to see. So we have created various, this one same consciousness has created various instruments for it to experience different, in different ways, different things. Similarly, the collective consciousness of the society, which is a person.
Ah.
It's not a body. The body and person are different things.
Okay.
No, bodies are physical.
Person of the society, like, yeah.
Person of the society. Okay. Like, again, who am I? I'm a person, you know. You agree that I'm a person. But where is that person? This cell is the person, or that cell is the person, or this cell is the person. I cannot be located in any one part of my body.
Yes, and talking out of this, where would you be located in the world? So your influence on my society is really big, because you're teaching transcendental meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So don't you think you become a part of my society in this moment, of the German society?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, hopefully you won't.
Yeah. Yes. See, and again, there are various levels at which we can say, I'm a part of this or I'm a part of this.
No.
At one level, you can say, I belong to this particular village. No. But at the same time, I belong to this family also. I belong to that state also. I belong to that country also. No. So these are various levels of organization.
Mm-hmm.
And what is consciousness is nothing but an organization. You know, in maths, for example, a very important concept is the concept of a set.
Okay.
No. In fact, the whole mathematics can be built from set theory. No. And the concept of a set is that a set is a different entity than all its elements.
Ah, okay.
No. Like, what is a class? No. There are 10 students in, or 30 students in a class. Where is the class? Can you touch the class? This is one student, that is another student.
No, it's what we define to be a class.
Yeah, it's an idea.
Yes.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
And again, there are two concepts. One is real and unreal.
Okay.
And another is abstract and concrete. And many people think that what is concrete is real, what is abstract is unreal. But actually, it is exactly the opposite.
Which means?
Which means, who? Let's say, here.
Yeah.
No, who am I? The body is concrete.
Mm-hmm.
No, but the body can change. When I was a child, the body had different cells. All the cells have gone and new cells have been created. None of those cells exists. No, but I am the same. So I, which is more real to me, is something which is different from the concrete.
Yes.
Because the concrete parts have all gone.
Yes.
It's a new concrete that has been created. And the concept of I or the consciousness is the most abstract. But I identify with that abstract rather than with the concrete.
Yes, yes, because of all your thoughts, for example.
The real I,
yes,
is that abstract thing.
Okay.
You know, this concrete thing is not I. So what is abstract is real. What is concrete is a manifestation of that at the most.
Wow. This is big.
Like, what is a company?
Mm-hmm.
No, like you buy shares in a company and you deal with a company. A company has a legal status and everything happens. You know? But suppose a company is 100 years old, all the employees have changed, all the shareholders have changed, all the managers have changed, but it's the same company. And you deal with that company. That company is real for you. IBM is IBM, or, you know, whatever.
That's a good example, by the way.
You know?
Yeah.
So you are taking, if an employee leaves the company, or if a manager leaves the company, or even if the chairman leaves the company, you don't say, no, I don't deal with this company any longer. You continue dealing with it. You maybe adjust a little bit, but still, like the contract that a company has made still is valid, even if the previous chairman had signed it, a new chairman has come, but the contract is with the company, not with the chairman. No. So, for all practical purposes, the company is the real thing. But it is not concrete.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. All the concrete things, the buildings, everything can change, but the company still remains. So, like that, I am the company and all these cells are my employees and shareholders or whatever, you know, different things and the structures and the buildings, you know, and these buildings have been changing and the cells have been changing, but I am still the same.
Okay.
And that is real.
That's so interesting. You as a Swami, who's very digital, you were a physicist before, right? So I very often see that you post things about like immobility or new ideas in the world, development. What do you think? How long does it take to have a change of paradigm in a society?
Well, in one way you can say it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we'd say, suppose, how long does it take to break this rock? Let's say I start hammering it, and I hammer it 10 times, nothing happens, and the 11th time it suddenly breaks. So how much time it took? How many strikes did it take? Did it take one strike or did it take 10 strikes? Actually, each of those earlier 10 strikes was also doing something to it. Because if the 11th strike broke it, why didn't I right in the beginning give the 11th strike? You know?
Yes.
So, in something very subtle change has been taking place, and then suddenly a concrete change takes place.
That's interesting. In German we say Tropfen auf dem heißen Stein, the last drop on the hot stone. This is maybe the thing you mean.
Exactly,
also.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? So like that, it takes a long time for a paradigm to change, because let's suppose my palm upwards, you know, this is the state of the paradigm right now. If I try to change one part of it, and I turn it like that, it will be very difficult,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it will try to revert back.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody says these two things he wants to change, and there's three things he wants to change. And then a point comes when the whole hand gets flipped. Or think of a sheet of paper, you know, you turn one corner upside down and another corner. But when the whole sheet... So people try to piecemeal change the paradigm, and one person tries here, another person tries here, and it doesn't work. No. But somehow in the minds of people, this idea that change is needed starts to grow, and then suddenly people decide that let's change the whole thing. It won't do to change by parts.
It's so interesting, because I had this example of automobile world. We in Germany have this scandal, Volkswagen.
Yeah.
You maybe to know what it is. It's about this diesel scandal, as we say, they manipulated.
Hmm.
And sometimes I think maybe this is what we needed, just to get the awareness of that the mobility in general has to change. You know?
Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And people were trying piecemeal changes, like we'll make better... more efficient engines, and you know, better petrol and this and that. But then these things didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But still, people started thinking that something has to change. And then comes Elon Musk, and suddenly the whole idea that just forget about these engines altogether. It's a completely different thing.
I very often think Elon Musk should meditate instead of smoking pot and then sending out like crazy tweets. And maybe, I don't know if it will happen, I hope not, but he's sometimes very close to ruin his own company, even though his ideas are wonderful, you know, like, yeah. So do you think e-mobility will be the solution?
Yeah, it has to be.
Yes.
It has to be. There's no other way.
Do you think...
Of course, I mean, better than this.
Yes. Yeah.
And ultimately, if we go one step higher, mobility, again, we are talking of mobility of bodies. Why do you need to move the bodies? Because the real you is the mind.
Okay.
If you can move the mind, then you don't need to move the bodies.
Oh, you're talking of FaceTime?
That's one example.
Okay, good.
That's one manifestation of that. FaceTime is one manifestation. Yeah, and then teleportation or all those things. There's a whole range there also. Yeah.
Wow.
And basically, when I am thinking of Mumbai, let's say,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm totally engrossed in thinking about it, basically, I am in Mumbai, my body may be here. Because we are associating me with the concrete, that is why this problem comes, because concrete things can be at one place at one time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I am abstract. No. And the abstract things can be at many places at the same time.
That makes it so much easier here.
Yeah.
Das war Folge Nummer 4 von Feines Bewusstsein, Fine Consciousness, Thank you for listening. This was episode number 4 of Fine Consciousness. My name is Anne Siegel. I'm a writer. And the next episode will be my second part of the talk I had with Swami Shailendra Saraswati from India. And in this very next episode, we will talk about attention and communication. Thank you for listening. Bye. Eine Produktion von This Voice Travels.